Oh my God, you guys. Oh my God, I don't have any like fun plug music. Oh no. And I don't fast forward these plugs. I really want to talk to you guys about something. What I want to talk to you about is Hollywood Nights by Bob Seger. No, that's not a fun, that's a monotonous song. I think maybe we just won't have any music on the plugs. Oh my God. So I'm part of the All Things Comedy Network, which is an amazing thing started by Bill Burr and Al Madrigal. Go to allthingscomedy.com. There are many podcasts that you can support there. There are new Jen Kirkman t-shirts at Estoy Merchandise, which is where my Jen Kirkman collection lives. And that is spelled E-S, like Sam T, like Tom O-Y. Why are they only men's names? EstoyMerchandise.com. If you go to my website, JenKirkman.com, you can also get to Estoy Merchandise that way by clicking on the tab that says Merch. And you can buy, there's the brand new t-shirt. It is the, it just says, I'm going to die alone and I feel fine. And there is no apostrophe on purpose. It's supposed to look just like the artwork for the REM song, It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. And it's on sale now. And if you go to estoymerchandise.com, estoymerchandise.com, and then search my name, it'll take you to the Jen Kirkman collection. And you can get those shirts. You can get that t-shirt and wear it while you watch my special that comes out May 22nd worldwide on Netflix. I know people are like, is it going to be a DVD? Is it going to be a... There are restrictions on these types of things. I will not be able to release it, I think, for a long time. I think for a few years. So no, right now the only way to see it is on Netflix. And that will be the only way for a while. So that's that. Now, I am on tour in June to support the special. But I will not be doing necessarily stuff that you've seen in the special. Maybe a couple things here and there. Whatevs. No big. Right? So you got to go to my website, jenkirkman.com. Tickets are on sale right now. Areas I don't normally come to, like Sacramento, Tucson, Phoenix, Eugene, Oregon, Portland and Seattle I've come to a lot. Same with Vancouver, but those are all on sale too. These are all one-nighter gigs. So please buy tickets in advance. That helps me know not to cancel them. I hope I see you all there. Of course, I will come say hi after. I'll sign whenever you want. Meet and greet. Not going drinking with anyone. I will be in each city a total of 6 hours, in and out, just doing the show. It's going to be crazy for me, not you. You'll go home and go to bed. That's all on sale right now. I'm also at Comedy Works downtown in Denver, June 11th through 13th. And that's on sale now. Also, jenkirkman.com. Go to tour dates. If you want to have some fun, you can join the I Seem Fun podcast Twitter account, which I believe is twitter.com/iseemfun. Or it might be I Seem Fun podcast. If you go to Facebook, it's facebook.com/iseemfun. God, I should know this, you guys. Hang on. Oh my God, she's so unprofessional. She's so unprofessional. She's so unprofessional. She's so unprofessional. It's the facebook.com/iseemfun. Okay, great. And then if you want to email me, it's iseemfun@gmail.com. You can send me emails about, you can ask the pilot questions. You can send me emails about things you find fun that other people don't, or vice versa. You can talk about anything you want. You can ask me questions. We try not to have hate there, but I get the occasional hate mail. It will make me sad and I will delete it. So I don't know. You might not get anything out of it. Someone has started playing acoustic guitar at my window. They are not serenading me. I believe it is someone who lives in the building next door. And it's going to annoy me. Anyway, those are all the fun business things. And so enjoy this week's episode. I see fun. I see fun. The Diary of Jen Kirkman.
Oh,
Oh, I picked this song because you can't sing along to it. I don't feel like singing today. The Breeders. I mean, yeah, that's... But it's I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast. Episode 93. Oh, you guys. I'm cranky. I'm so cranky. Oh, it's just hopeless today. It's just a do-over kind of day. I mean, it's nighttime and I'll be in bed in 3 hours. So maybe I'll meditate before bed and just... Oof, boy, cranky. You know when you're so cranky that you know what you could do to make yourself feel better? Like, light some candles, do some meditating, call a friend and ask how they are. And you're like, no. Just gonna sit here and be cranky. My mother called me today. You're coming undone. I can see it. What is... Something is wrong, I think. I said, no, I'm just so cranky from this, all doing all this press. I know you're like, what press are you talking about? I'm on the phone every day, all day long, doing interviews for the Netflix thing. Which is great. I actually like doing press, but it's a lot. And then I'm also doing press for the 30 tour dates I have coming up this summer. None of this is a complaint. It's just that I just get cranky. Yeah, I don't want to see my name out there too much. It bothers me. I get bothered by having a special out because it's just, you know, I'm really excited for my book to come out. Not because I think I'm the world's greatest author. Oh, so my mom was like, you're coming undone. I'm like, it's just the tour and the press stuff that... It just makes me cranky, but I'll be okay. It's like, I don't know, you're really losing it. But it's just... what I really like about my Netflix special, which will be out in a couple of days worldwide, May 22nd. Yeah, I'm... It's not a bad thing to have one, and what it could really help with is... kind of bringing in new people to see me. If they like me, then maybe more people will come to my shows and I can keep doing this for a living. So that possibility is exciting. And because Netflix airs in Australia and in kind of the Nordic areas, I have heard that other people have, at least in the Nordic areas, have gained great popularity just from having a special on Netflix. So that will help with my touring. Hopefully. So there is a lot of great possibilities out there that, again, it all comes back to, I just want to be a stand-up for a living. The level I'm at right now is the frustrating level where you want to just stop because I have not hit my tipping point yet where I am so successful that I'm making so much money without having to go on the road 3 weeks out of the year. Like my tour in June, I get on an airplane every morning and perform that night and go to bed and then get up at 5 and go, you know, I do that 10 days in a row, do it again in July. So I'm not complaining. I'm just, but it's risky because every show, because I'm doing one-nighters in theaters and rock clubs is, there's no guarantee. So if you don't come, I don't make any money, which is fine. Like I obviously made some money last year and, I put that in I wrapped it in tinfoil and put it in my freezer. I hope I didn't throw it out. So, you know, I'll be fine. It was a risk I wanted to take. I wanted to specifically build this tour in a specific way that was, hey, I'm on my Netflix tour and I'm coming to some secondary markets that I don't normally come to, like Eugene, Oregon and Tucson, you know, and, I have been to both places before. I just haven't performed there. And, so, you know, things like that. I wanted it to not just be comedy clubs where I have to be somewhere 5 shows in one weekend. It gets a little monotonous and having to stay in the same city, it's just kind of waste some time. I want to reach as many people as possible and get out there. I thought summertime would be kind of a funny time to tour because it's usually a bad time to do comedy clubs. But it might be a good time to do one-nighters because the reason I say it's a bad time to do comedy clubs is most people who have a couple bucks are away in the summer or they go away on the weekend or they go on their boat or whatever, or they're hungover by 3 p.m. because they've been drinking all day or whatever. But my fans who may not have air conditioning, the younger ones with less bucks to spare, they may have 10 or 15 bucks for a show that has no drink minimum. And they'll come see me at said local rock club or theater, and then they'll have some air conditioning that night. Not that people in Arizona don't have air conditioning. I know everybody does, but you get the gist. It was kind of something I thought about with my agent, and I wanted to call it the air conditioning tour, but I didn't because it ended up being a Netflix tour. See, I thought my special was going to come out in the fall, but it didn't. So anyway, yeah, I'm just a little cranky, but I have PMS, and that is really when those hormones take control, you guys. I mean, men have hormones too. You understand when your testosterone is pumping and you're either, you know, feeling super naughty or like you want to punch someone. That's what we have with our, I suppose it's our estrogen or progesterone. I don't really know exactly what hormone it is during PMS, and you think I would, but I don't even care. I just know it's there. And it's so weird to me when men think it's something we can control. It's a hormone, just like you have. I know you guys listening aren't this way, but I've worked with some dudes who are like, yeah, it's just my wife's time a month to, like, complain about stuff. It's like, no, she can't, like, your brain doesn't work properly. Not in the sense that, like, well, can't have a woman president because she'll, you know, it's that kind of thing where when you, everything functions properly, but when the thing that's fucking driving you nuts is happening, you just kind of have that circular thinking that a depressive would have. So it's almost like you're in a depression for a couple days and a blind rage. Now, sometimes you don't have that. There are some months when I don't have that. And actually eating well and sleeping and exercising is the best way to ward off emotional PMS. And I usually do. I don't always get it, but this was not the week for me to have it. I was coming off of jet lag from Australia. And then I had to travel to the East Coast and get up at 4 a.m. on Thursday morning, land in North Carolina, have a couple hours free, and then go do a show. And then I had to be done with a show and all of the paperwork and all of the stuff that you have to do behind the scenes at 12:30 on Saturday, and I had to be up at 4:30 to go to the airport. So I lost really some quality sleep this weekend, and I'm just so fucking cranky, but it will pass. So I don't want to be a big complainer, but I might be a little bit. Just a little bit. You know, the same three things piss me off, and I guess my life is blessed because, but yeah, I'm gonna you know, I just need a little more money so that I can get a full-time assistant to help with stuff. And I don't know. I think I need, you know, don't email me. I'll get coffee. I wanted to read this part from Frederick Eklund's book, but people are always like, I would totally be your assistant. I'm like, you would hate it. It's not fun. I'm a complete Nazi because I was an administrative assistant most of my life, and it's not being pals with someone. And it's like, I work from the minute I get up to the minute I go to bed. And then when I blow off steam, like I go off the grid and I'm blowing off steam, having fun. But my waking hours are mostly working or prepping or working on tours or all these behind the scene things that you don't always see. And so I would want my assistant to be thinking of things before I do, not doing unnecessary, annoying things that I didn't ask. But it's not happening right now because I'm not rich enough for an assistant. Not right now to pay them in the way that I would want to pay them to ensure the work. Why am I even talking about this? It's not happening. So, but I would love to have someone because I'm starting to lose my shit with social media. I think that's why my mom thinks I'm coming undone. And I am. I get so annoyed at people who won't look at my fucking website or my tour dates. I don't understand. I pay someone to run my website. I put my tour dates up the minute they're announced. I say over and over and over and over, this leg of the tour is on sale. More dates coming. On my website, I think it says more dates coming. I'll have to add that. I'm not new here. You know, I'm not Amy Schumer. I'm not famous. But I'm not new here. If you are just finding out about me, have the humility to think maybe you're new here. I have been doing this for way too fucking long. And so somebody tweeted at me today. This even was, I thought, okay, I'm safe. If someone's on my email list, they've read my little letter. And they get my letter every week that I send out. So I have a letter on my website that explains why it's frustrating for comedians to always hear, come to this, come to that. And that, but it's nice and it's funny. And then I give you the option to join my email list as a way to make your life easier so that you don't have to do anything. I explain in the letter that I have a high-powered agent. I have a manager. I have a publicist. I have all these people that help me book tours and so anyone who is on my email list has read that, or maybe they haven't, but, and this guy wrote me today, I'm on your email list, but I notice you're not coming to Iowa, when it doesn't say, these are my, you guys, I'm so cranky, mommy, you're right, I'm coming undone, I can't take this pressure anymore, so I have 6 months more left of touring, and at the expense of a personal life, I will be touring all fucking summer and fall, nonstop. I never said I wasn't coming to Iowa. It's on my list of places for July. I just can't announce it yet. Dear God in heaven. So this guy wrote, I notice you're not coming to Iowa. Is there something we can all do to help places book you? It's like, no, because I'm not, I'm way past that level. I like, do you know how hard it is to get a stand-up booking agent? Because they have to make money off you or they get fired. Like, no, I don't. And people, well, he's just being nice. But why do I have to deal with people who are nice? Why? What is nice about that? What is nice about being so patently wrong about how far along someone is in their career or job or whatever I have? And completely ignoring everything they take the time to write every week and they pay someone to put the email list up and all this. What is nice about assuming that the reason I have not come to Iowa, as far as you know, is because I can't get booked anywhere? The fuck is that? I'm sorry, but if you don't relate, don't email me that I'm negative. It is absolutely maddening to be talked to the way I am talked to on social media by people who are, quote, just trying to be nice. I have never seen it happen to my male peers where it is assumed that they are struggling. I'm very honest with you guys about the fact that, you know, I want to make all my money doing stand-up and I want to make a lot of it. And I'm not at that point yet. There is a tipping point of fame you have to hit, right? And I just haven't hit it. And I don't know if I will, right? And it's okay. That's the other reason I don't like putting out a special is that, so what I'm really proud of with this Netflix special is that I really like the scenes that we shot. You'll see what I mean when you see it. But I wrote them. Lance Bangs directed them. I cast all the actors, watched hours of audition tapes. I thought these people would make it the most realistic. They improvised a little bit here and there, and that made it really fun for me. And it was this wonderful day of shooting, and it felt really fun. And I thought, oh, this is partly what it would feel like to have my own show, and especially to have the Netflix woman there who was just like, yeah, do whatever, we don't care, like there's no notes, you know. So that was great, and that's my favorite part, that I got to do this little extra fun thing. The special, I mean, I think it's funny, I guess, you know, I would recommend you watch it. I'm really you know, it's not horrible, but I'm just never going to be the type of person that wants to put stand-up on tape. They had to, like, sit on me to make those albums. And honestly, the only reason I made the albums was because I wasn't touring then. Because back then, I didn't have an audience and I couldn't have toured. And I couldn't get a stand-up agent and I couldn't get places to book me 10 years ago. So, which was normal. That's where, when you're first starting out in stand-up. And first starting out does mean the first seven, eight years. That is still considered starting out. So, or whenever I made those albums, I made albums, right? So, now you have to make a special. And, you know, I got paid well for it, and I'm glad I did it. And it's a notch under my belt. But, yeah, it's one of those things where I go, I could have done that joke better. I could have done this better. It never sits well with me. With books, for some reason, I feel very complete when I've completed them. They don't live and breathe inside me the way stand-up does. So once my book is out, I'm really excited to promote it. And I feel it was the best I could do. With stand-up, I'm always working on it. Even if I don't do those bits anymore live, they're still in my head. And I might drag one out here or there and stuff. So, you know, it's just kind of the brain of a performer. I don't like when people get excited about things like, people have watched way too much television. You know, this isn't the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. This isn't the day before Nirvana released Nevermind. This is not anyone on the Johnny Carson show and the next day they're a millionaire. Things in this culture come and go. The special will be out. It will not. If it does bring me new fans, I won't know for possibly a year. I won't know anything. Maybe there'll be a little flurry of tweets that are like, I saw it. It was great. From the people that already come see me. Like, it's not going to move the meter. You know, and so people get excited. I go, now you're just making, you know, like my agents will text me like, are you excited for the next step? I'm like, no, because I've already filmed it. So to me, that experience is over. It coming out is for you guys. I can't sit here being excited about it. I'm already doing the next thing. That's just how it works. But so it's not that I don't feel excited. I just don't think about it that way. I'm not in result, you know, result. Why did I say it like that? In result. I don't think some life-changing event is going to happen because this came out. What I do hope is that in very mathematical ways, it brings me to touring and all that kind of stuff in these areas I mentioned. Okay, so get those complaints out of the way. And please don't send me PMS remedies. I already feel you typing. I didn't do my diet and exercise this week. I just fucked up. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, do you want to ever hear a period story? Guys, can you handle it? Well, first of all, I was laughing about how I guess men's rights activists are really mad about Mad Max, which I don't even know what's going on. I kept seeing Mad Max trending on Twitter, and I was like, oh, they must be showing a rerun of it on, like, the AMC channel. I had no idea they remade it. And I don't even know if it's a remake or a sequel or just has anything to do with the first Mad Max with, wasn't it Tina Turner and Mel Gibson? I don't know what's happening. I'm in such a bubble. Okay, so I'm like, so then the AV Club wrote this great article about how men's rights activists are mad because there's too many women in it kicking ass and all this stuff. And I was cracking up. So I tweeted that. And then everyone in my feed was awesome about it. Like, these guys were like, hang on one sec. Okay, so, but then a bunch of dudes were like, no, you should see it. It's like women kicking ass. And it's so funny because it's like, I love when like movies have decided, like, attention, everyone. Movies have decided that women can kick ass. It's like, yeah, we've been fucking kicking ass. Like, we're the shit on group in society or one of them. So we've always been kicking ass because it's that much harder for us to just walk around in the world. So yeah, just getting up kicks ass. And also, like, not me, but some of you guys have the babies. But I know what they mean. But for me, kicking ass isn't kicking ass in the way that, like, you know, a man stereotypically would in a movie. Like, oh, she is a machine gun too. And like, okay, but that's not, you know, we've got to start seeing inherently feminine traits as ass kicking as well, if that makes a sense. Right? It would be like saying, like, oh my God, you know, Jews in society have been shit on so much and they were put in ovens and now they're, you know, they built this, so many industries in America and they're still getting the prejudice against them and shit on. And, but you know what? I just saw this great movie where they were putting people in ovens. Like, no, they don't want to act that way. There's other forms of strength. Like when you rise up against, being pushed down, right? You don't have to act like the oppressor to prove that you can kick ass. Now, I'm not saying only men can have machine guns. Not all men. Yes, all women. No, some people. I'm just saying for me, I'd rather watch a documentary like The Punk Singer with Kathleen Hanna. That's someone kicking some ass. Who cares, Jen? I'll probably see Mad Max. Me sitting in a movie theater is probably never going to happen. I don't make that kind of time for those kind of things. How does that sound? I hear when people say I don't have time. You're not making the time for those kind of things. So that's not what I'm making time for. But God bless. Okay. So, hang on a sec. Okay. Sorry about that, you guys. I'm really distracted too. I really apologize, you guys. This is not a good thing. Oh, okay. So I was going to tell you a period story. So, this is embarrassing. So I think guys, you might learn from this. You might like this. Is there any young boys out there listening? A woman knows. Let's play some period music. Let's play some relaxing spa music so that I can talk about this period story. How does that sound? Can you hear this? I'm just going to have it on in the background. I don't know how much you can hear it. But not to brag, I've been getting my period since I was, 14 years old. No, not 14, 15. I was a late bloomer. Very thin kid. And then it didn't really come back full time until I was 16 and a half. But I've been getting my period, what? That's over 25 years. And it's the same thing every month. And you can sort of tell it's coming. It's this really cool little relationship you have with your body. I don't know what the equivalent might be for a man, this kind of instinctual thing you feel, and then a little change happens. Not your dicks. You mean, you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you guys don't have something comparable. Well, you tell me if you think. So what usually happens is, you know, if you have your PMS, your physical symptoms, a few days before you start to bleed, you may get cramps, right? That's the blood trying to get through your tiny little, I don't know, tubes, veins, whatever it comes out of. Any of you studying for anatomy class, don't listen to this because I half don't even know what I'm saying. And then you might get sore boobs. And then you wake up the morning you're supposed to get your period, and the sore boobs are gone, and you just know, oh, the hormones have shifted, the period is going to begin. Usually how it begins is just like suddenly there's just sort of this coagulation of blood in your underwear, but it's dark. It's like dark purple. You know, it's like blood clotty looking because it's been up in you. I'm allergic to the candles in the spa for days, you know? It's very rarely the type of blood you see when you prick your finger. It's not fresh, oxygenated, pink, Kool-Aid, watery blood. It's almost like if grape jelly had a thinner consistency, right? Okay, so that's what it looks like and always looks like. There's such a thing called spotting, where for no reason, you might see a little blood in your underwear, the tiniest bit, in the middle of your cycle, meaning during the time of the month you're not supposed to have your period. There's many reasons for this. Some people, they just are spotters. Some people, it could mean they're pregnant. Some people, it could mean they're pregnant and they're losing the baby. It could mean a million things. I never spotted ever in my life. I'm one of those people that just kind of has an easy breezy period, except for I get my PMS because I'm prone to depression and anxiety. I think that's how it manifests in me. Luckily, I'm not one of these cramps people. I don't get cramps really. That's also because I eat extremely fucking healthy. So I do think there's something to it. Not blaming you. Just saying. So, now they say when you travel, it can throw your cycle off. But I'm also on the pill, which keeps you regular. It, like, keeps it to, like, the day you know you're going to get it and the day it ends. So I go to Australia, and I don't have any period weirdness. My period is on point in Australia. Last week, I'm at home. And I'm severely dehydrated last week, you guys, just from traveling. And I hate water. And I know that sounds ridiculously obnoxious. And it's not a cool thing to say. Especially when so many people on this planet do not have access to it. I don't hate water. I find it hard to drink it. I don't think it's a pleasant experience the way, say, drinking a hot cup of tea or coffee is, or a nice glass of wine. So I have to put... Oh, I'll put a cucumber in it or some lemon. I don't put those powders in it. I don't want to drink chemicals. Or I have to make it fun. Like, put it, like I have a water, plastic, whatever. I've got one of those portable things. It's cute. It's Kate Spade. It's polka dot. It has a straw in it. I put ice in it. I put water in it. I carry it around all day. I drink out of a straw. I'm going to get those mouth wrinkles, but it's worth it. All right. Is there more spa music? We started over. Okay. So last week, all of a sudden, I goes to the restroom. I do a number one. I could just go a little tinkle. Very adorable. And as I wipe, as my mom used to call it, my front bum when I was little, I noticed a little bit of pink. And I thought, what the fuck is this? My urine shouldn't be pink. I looked in the toilet. I'm a scientist. And I said, my urine isn't pink. It's a little yellow, which it shouldn't be. It should be clear. That's when you know you're hydrated. And I thought, perhaps I'm bleeding a little. But my period would be 10 days early, which wouldn't make any sense. And I have zero symptoms of PMS. This continued for about a day, and I started to get really nervous. I thought I'm bleeding from inside. Now, that is the fucked up part about getting a period, is once a month you bleed, and you know instinctively that it's your period. There has never been a time when I've been like, what if it's my bladder? What if I'm just bleeding internally? Like, you just feel it. You know it, right? That's what I meant by, do guys have a comparable thing where if something happened to you, you would be like, no, no, this is that guy thing that happens. This isn't, you know, something bad. Like, maybe your balls feel a certain way one day, but you know it's not cancer because your balls do a thing every once in a while. I don't know. You email me if you want. But I couldn't feel that it was my period, and I thought, something's wrong, and I have to go to North Carolina the next day. And it was 4 o'clock on last Wednesday, and I called my doctor, who normally... I have to speak really fast to the receptionist or he just hangs up. He'd be like, that's fine, Jennifer, bye. So I finally got them to listen. I was like, maybe I have a urinary tract. I don't know what I said. I said, something's wrong. They go, come right down. And they actually were still open. So I went down there. And I'd had, again, the little wiping with seeing a little bit of pink. That'd been happening for an entire day. I drove down, I walked in, my doctor was like, who knows? And she handed me the urine sample cup and I went to the bathroom. Once in the bathroom, I was like a 14-year-old girl again. I had my period in my underwear. And I knew it was my period. I felt it. Hello, period. It's you. We've been through this. What, I get 12 a year and I've had it for 24 years? Or let's say 25 years times 12. You're not even supposed to get that many. Your body is supposed to get pregnant. I've had it 300 times. Hello, 300th. I should have had confetti. Ooh. But I was embarrassed because I thought, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with me. And I went back in. I did the urine sample. No big deal. Stopped by paparazzi on the walk back from the bathroom in the hallway. Jen, can we get a picture of the urine sample? No, let me have my privacy. I go to the doctor, I say, I just started my period. And she goes, well, why didn't you think that that was what that was? I go, I don't know. She goes, is something wrong? I go, I don't think so. She goes, are you worried about something? I go, no. And she goes, well, let me... So she did like a little, you know... Put your feet in the air. Speculum. Open you up. Swab that. See what's up. Results are fine. I went to the doctor at age almost 41 because I was confused and didn't know what my period was. Do you know how embarrassing that is? But I had never spotted in my life, you see. And my period came early. Then it went away. I'm waiting for it to come back. It came a few days early because it was like, bitch, why are you going to Australia crossing the international date line then coming back? I was all used to it there. And I'm like, so was I. I wish I could bleed out of my eyes, but I can't. At least you get some relief. You can bleed out. I just have to hold all these thoughts in my head about how I still can't, don't feel adjusted back in America. Anyway, was that a beautiful story about my period? I just thought maybe guys would want to hear stuff like that. I know we're often told women shouldn't talk about it, but I feel like boys, why wouldn't boys want to hear about blood? You like all that shit. If it happened to you, you know you'd be talking about it. Let's talk about our periods. But it is a weird thing that you bleed every month and you never once think, what if it isn't a period this time, though? What if this is the end? Look at that. It ended just at the right time. I hope you can hear the relaxing spa music in the background. So, you know, that's good, right? What was I going to say? What was I going to say? Okay. So that's it. Wait, no, that's not the podcast. I mean, that's that story about my period. I'm trying to look through notes that I left. Okay, so I just came back from... Oh, I had one more Australia story, but it's not really about Australia. It's just about a guy at... about a guy that works at the airport. So when I was in Brisbane going home, I went to the airport. I bought myself a Swatch watch. I don't know. I'm going through this little love affair with Swatch watches because they're like nice and inexpensive and they have that big face that I love and I think they look kind of cool. So I have a couple pairs and I saw this nice black and gold one at the airport and it was like $50 and I wanted it. And I bought it at duty free. So the guy helping me was really nice. He sounded Swedish. He definitely wasn't Australian. He kind of sounded like the Swedish chef. He was like, doo-doo-doo. I mean, not literally like that, but not like that either. And he said, you're American and what brought you to Australia? And I said, no, he didn't ask me what brought me here. He just said, do you live here? I said, no, I'm going home. And he said, oh, he goes, I've always wanted to go to America. And I said, well, it is great. But you have to know where you want to go because it's such a wildly different country from itself that you could see Arkansas and not realize that Chicago is also the same country. And so is Hawaii. And, you know, I mean, it just depends on what you want to do. And he was like, oh, I already know. I want to go to the Smithsonian. He goes, I love history so much. He said, the Smithsonian is my dream. And I heard that you really need a week to see the whole thing. And I said, yeah, it's really vast. And I think you would love it. And you'd probably love Philadelphia as well if you could get there. I mean, that's manageable to see. And he's like, I just love all history and not just American history, but I didn't want to say you're standing in front of the Star of Drunk History, sir. Wasn't about me. But he said history is his passion. I said, do you do any work with it in any way? He's like, no, it's just my favorite thing. I'm always reading about it. And I thought that was wonderful. I have an affinity for history as well. Probably not as much as this guy, though. And so I said, well, are you planning a trip? And he said, I just can't afford it. It's too expensive. And it made me so sad about how expensive flights can be. And how, God, oh my God, that flight would be so long for him too. But to the East Coast, I mean, ugh. But I said, well, you love it so much that maybe somehow it will be meant to be that you get to go, because I like to believe if you love something enough, it just will work out in terms of being sent. Maybe he'll get to be sent somewhere, or he'll win a lottery or some kind of contest. I don't know. Or maybe he won't. But it was very heartbreaking for me to think that he wouldn't. Because how many people are standing at the Smithsonian every day just like, yeah, whatever, I'm on a field trip. What the fuck, dude? You know, and then this guy really wants to go. And he said, my girlfriend, she doesn't care about history at all, so she might be bored. But then I was like, that's where the problem is. Right? If he had that lady in his life that was like, honey, you're going to get to the Smithsonian. We're going to save $10 a week. And we're going to get enough money for some kind of flight. I don't know, something, right? Well, who's this lady that doesn't like history as much as her live-in man? I mean, not that you have to like the same things. But there was something about it that made me think she's the fucking problem. Not in a sexist way, calm down. But something. He seemed sad in the eyes about the partnership. And I was like, God, if I was rich, I would just be like, I would get his info, give it to my assistant who would get it, and then we'd send him an open-ended ticket round trip to DC. Wouldn't that be fun to just be able to do stuff like that for people? And I wouldn't want to stay in touch with him because the reaction would never be what I wanted it to be. Like, it would either be too weird, like he would think now we're close and he would keep in touch. Like, I just want you to have that experience. But we're not friends. We're not hanging out now because of that. Not that he would want to. Or I don't want to hear like, you know what, I actually didn't like it that much. Like, I don't want to know. But I think that would be, you are rich, you rich bitch. Why do you keep saying if I was rich? Just because you can't afford to, you know, send someone to the Smithsonian? Well, I put food on the table for my family every week. And I sit in my cubicle and I type. And I can't believe that to you, rich just means buying a ticket for someone else round trip to Australia. To me, rich is that you drink sometimes 2 Starbucks in a day, venti. I mean, come on, make your own coffee at home. I'm sorry, but I just don't relate to you anymore. And you complained the whole beginning of the podcast. I had to fast forward it. Anyway, so, okay. So the airports in Australia, this is, okay, so I'm TSA pre-check now, you motherfuckers. Ooh, ooh, I knew you were rich, bitch. It's only $80. I shouldn't even tell you guys this. I don't want any more people to be TSA pre-check. God, it's so great to just, because they don't even, you know how you have to have your, well, nobody does. I mean, except the biggest nerd on earth. I don't know one person who literally only puts 3 trial size bottles in their, you know, little see-through clear toiletry bag when they take it out and put it in the tray. Although there was one Midwest town, I want to say it was Wisconsin, this really small airport in Wisconsin, where I had like 6 or 7 little bottles in a bag. And he was like, it has to be 3. And I go, well, fine, I'll put it in 2 separate bags. He goes, per person. I go, okay, well, it's not happening. I go, LAX let me out with this. You're not going to let me get on the plane? He's like, nope, you have to throw 4 of them out. I'm like, he's like, it's security. It's, you know, red alert. I'm like, oh, you wish something like 9/11 would happen here. It's not going to, sweetie. I mean, come on, everybody. So, don't even get me started on the Boston Strong thing. Okay, so, fuck you. I do want to explain myself about Boston Strong. Oh, this is probably dangerous territory to go into. No, I'm not going to do it this week. I'm just going to say that I had a different experience with people's reactions to it than, and they weren't strong. People that I know, friends of my sister, certain family members, hiding in their homes in the suburbs for weeks after the guy was already caught and terrified that Al-Qaeda was in Boston. This guy was a rogue teenager. I'm not saying he's a great person, but Okay. I should cut that out. I have to just explain to you that I'm talking about very specific people who've never left the suburbs, who thought Boston was under attack. Does that make sense? Okay. But they would be the first people to be like, Boston's strong. And it's like you showed fear, which is fine. Everyone can feel fear, but the point of strength is to not hide in your house. Not the time that the mayor said hide in the house. We're looking for the guy. Not that. After they caught him, people were afraid to go out. And they didn't go out. That's not what we did in New York on 9/11. That's right. I mentioned 9/11 on the podcast twice so far. Okay. So TSA PreCheck, I love just putting all my toiletries in the little clear bag and putting like 7 billion of them in it and having like five different bags of it and my computer's in there and my shoes are on and I'm wearing a coat and a hat and I just stroll on through. I just fucking throw my suitcase on the belt like a football and I'm like, "What's up, dudes?" And I don't even have to go through that crazy machine anymore, the one that gave me radiation probably. I just go through the other one that doesn't even look like you're going through anything. Oh my God, it's the fucking best. It's changed my life, you know? Everything goes faster. Oh, what a dream. But what I was saying about the airports in Australia, within domestic flights, you don't even show ID. You could, if your brother booked a plane ticket under Bob Smith and then your name is John Smith, you could just print his ticket and then go on. Like, they don't even look. And you don't have to take your shoes off. You don't have to take all this shit out of your bag. It's like everyone's TSA pre-check up in that country. God, all right, it's great. Yeah, so I was so. Oh, so I was going to read this part from Frederick Eklund's book from a Million Dollar Listing. I'll look at that while I tell this other story. So this weekend, I played at. Let's see, you guys. So I played. Charlie Goodnights in North Carolina this past week, and it was super fun. Two awesome women run the club, which is great. I heard it used to be run by kind of a creepy guy, so I used to kind of avoid going there. And then now these two great women run it, Kelsey and Revan. So that's always really nice, right? And so, but it's very interesting. I did some press. I talked to this guy, Dimitri. Ooh, shout out. I know he's a fan of my podcast. I was going to say this on air, but I didn't. So I'll say it here. He was interviewing me about, the name of my special and the things people say to me about not wanting kids. And he said, "Well, even I at one point would look at you and think, so she doesn't want kids. What is wrong with her?" Like he was trying to say like, "Yeah, that's a thought that's passed through his head and he knows it's stupid." But I was going to say to him, even admitting that you thought that and saying that to me is still part of the culture where people think they can say anything to people who don't want kids. Like, that's kind of a fucked up thing to think about someone. Absolutely, something could be wrong with me or nothing could be wrong with me, but I don't care enough to work on it because I just am not interested in having children. I have things wrong with me in other areas of my life, and my goal would be to have, certain things in my life, and I'm not good with those things because something's wrong with me, probably, and so I work on it. But I don't care to know why I don't want kids or if there's something wrong or, but it's that thing of like, would you say to a black person, a person of color sitting in your studio, yeah, I mean, I know it's wrong, but sometimes I wonder like why you guys loot all the time. Like it's this thing of like, there are other groups that you would kind of hold your tongue with first. And people just no filter when they talk to us, even when they're being self-aware. Like, I know it's wrong, but I do think this. It's like, yeah, but you're still saying it. So that's what I was going to say to him on air, but I didn't because I didn't want it to come off like I was being feisty. And I actually didn't really articulate it well in my head until just now. So, but there were lots of Child Free by Choice people there at the shows. Shout out to everybody. There were some Iseem Funners. This woman was sitting there and she goes, "Let me just say, ooh, ooh." And then it's awkward though, lady. I know that you were, because I was asking her questions about herself, but it's one of those things where no one else in the audience knows what you're talking about. And then I don't, it's like having my mom in the audience. I can only be like, "Thank you, mom. Everyone, that's my podcast. She is a big fan." And then it sounds like when you yell, ooh, ooh, like people wonder, like, well, why is it okay for her to do that? lots of loud talkers at one of the shows in the back of the room. Just, and they, turns out they're like, we're the biggest fans of Jen. And then when they got kicked out, finally, they got kicked out during the last 10 minutes of my set, which I don't totally agree with. I think clubs should kick out talkers immediately because the audience members can hear the people talking and they're miserable. And everyone was coming up to me like, this is why I hate comedy clubs. So I'm going to tell you guys, I fucking love comedy clubs. I think they're cool. I grew up watching them on TV. I think they've got this sexy 80s kind of vibe to them. It seems like a place, you know, where adults go to hear adult conversation. And I don't want to have to, you know, give up playing them. But it does cater to a certain kind of person that just is out for a good time, buying drinks, blah, blah. If you guys are bothered by people talking loudly, the best thing to do, because a lot of times this is how fucked up comedy clubs are. The person drunk and yelling, not even yelling out, but just talking loudly while you're performing, they will get kicked out. They will be asked three times to be quiet, which I think is stupid. Once and they get kicked out. Like there's no talking in the opera or the ballet or the theater. There's not like, okay, three strikes, like three strikes. I'm already totally distracted by that. And I'm worried and I'm not able to use my full creative brain because my brain is doing my act. And if everyone is enjoying me and listening and laughing, then my subconscious is thinking up new little taglines or ways to stay in the moment. When I hear people talking, I'm on the defense waiting for how to handle it. And then my act becomes rote or routine. And it's just not a fun creative feeling. So it's actually hurts the performer and it hurts the audience members around them. But this is how fucked up comedy clubs are. If you are talking, you will usually be drunk and aggressive. And when they kick you out, you'll say things like, I come here all the time and I'm not coming back. It's usually not true, but they will give you free tickets. So now the person has been rewarded and they get to come back again for free and possibly act the same way. I, on behalf of all comedians, am begging you guys, when you go to comedy clubs, if you hear people talking, yes, you can shush them if you want. That gets a little distracting as well, but I also love it. Go up to the manager, not the wait staff. Ask for the manager after the show. Get a bunch of people together. If you found other people sitting near you, just wait after the show. You can go up and ask the comedian to point you in the direction of the manager, and we will. Just tell us why. And say to them, I will not come here anymore if you keep catering to people that are talking. And I want free tickets, and I will come back, but something needs to be done because this is why fans of comedy don't go to clubs anymore. And just keep saying that. We have to keep reiterating until the culture is that people who love comedy are back in the audience. That's how it used to be. And then it just gets worse. And this 2-drink minimum crap is something that's hard for people to afford. And then so they end up having to give away free tickets. When you give away free tickets, you usually give them to boneheads who don't really know what comedy is. And they think, why would you respect something you didn't pay for? Does that make sense? So, yeah, I think there needs to be a major fucking overhaul of the way things are done. In general, though, I love the buildings of comedy clubs. I love I love that there's a place set aside to do comedy and nothing else goes on in those rooms. I think that's so fantastic and special and so American. And I just think it's great. And I don't want to lose them, you know? The vibe is right in a comedy club for me. I like a theater. I like a rock club too, but I don't want to lose comedy clubs. Why do I keep sneezing? Hang on. So that's just my thing to you. Okay. So people who are at my shows might've heard this, but this was my favorite thing that happened when I was in, when I was in North Carolina in Raleigh, I had some fun shoes on, you guys. I'm not going to lie. There are these blue and gold shoes that I have. If you follow me on Instagram, and why not do it? Instagram.com/Jen Kirkman, Jen with one N. Got a little allergy up in here. So, I bought them in New Orleans last year at a shop on Chartres Street called Shoe-Bee-Doo. And the brand is called United Nude. And I was sold some bill of goods bullshit that's like, they're made by architects or I don't know what that has to do with anything. So, but I wore them And people were coming up to me nonstop. I've worn them before, obviously. And maybe someone I'm directly having a conversation with will say they like it. But people were making points to come up to me and say, I love those shoes. So my favorite situation was, I'm at a Starbucks, of course. And then, of course, I took a picture of me at Starbucks and, or no, I took a picture of me doing some press and I was holding a Starbucks cup and this guy writes, God, don't they have any good coffee in America? Starbucks, why would you choose that? It's like, honey, you don't even fucking begin to know my life. Like, I just did a show last night, got back to my room at 10:30, had to be up at 6:30 a.m., like, not full hair and makeup, but like looking halfway decent because everyone takes your picture now at radio. And I had to do 6 hours of press from radio shows to TV stations. I was in the South, which isn't exactly New York City. I had someone else driving me and we drove to a fucking radio station in the woods. And on the way, there is a Starbucks. I wasn't walking up and down the cobblestone streets of Paris going, which shop should I go in? And I picked Starbucks. Like, get off my fucking ass, right? This is why I hate social media. I'm just, and why I love it. I have these wonderful interactions with wonderful people. And then something like that can just fucking take it down for me. Where it's like, why be so goddamn condescending, you pasty white fuck? You know what I mean? Anyway. Sorry, this is PMS out of control. So, but I'm walking outside the Starbucks to go back into the car and this guy in a huge pickup truck pulls up next to me and goes, excuse me, ma'am, can I say something real creepy to you? And I'm like, no, like, of course you can't. But like an idiot, I'm kind of want to know why he's self-aware enough to know that what he's about to say might be creepy. So I walk up to the truck and then I went, no, you know what? No. And so then I start walking away and he starts rolling up closer to me. He goes, I know. I just have to say it. I love your shoes. They're eye-catching. They're show-stopping. I haven't seen anything like it. They're so unique. And I go, oh, is that all you wanted to say? He goes, yeah. And on stage, I wrote like a joke about it, but that this is just the real-life version of the story. And I was like, oh, dude, I totally was giving him my like catcalling lesson. I go, you're totally right that yelling out of a truck could scare a woman, but we are in broad daylight and there's people with me. And you were talking about my shoes. A specific compliment saying those shoes are cool is not about my body. It doesn't make me feel like a piece of meat. I don't feel objectified. You know, if you went, those shoes show off your pretty little legs. I love legs. You know, I want to gnaw on them. Then I'd be like, no, that's weird. You know what I mean? Or like, nice bra. Like, all right. That's not what I mean. But nice shoes is like totally fine to say. I just love picturing that maybe this guy, you know, had to say it to me. And maybe he was straight and he's in the culture of what being straight means. And it means you can't like a woman's shoes. And maybe he was confused. And like, if I don't say something, then, you know, I won't be able to live with myself and I won't get off. It'll be in my head forever, you know? And then he's on his deathbed and his kids are like, do you have any last words? And he's like, blue and orange shoes. And they're like, what? And then he dies and no one knows what he was talking about. So I appreciate that he said that. Shout out to that guy in the pickup truck. Ooh, ooh. I'm trying to load my notebook on my Kindle because I highlighted all these parts okay, so I love the show Million Dollar Listing and I love Frederick Eklund, one of the real estate agents, and he wrote a great book and he had a really great section about if you want to be an assistant, like the right way to go about it. And it's like loading. So I can't find them. So maybe I can get that ready for next week or something. I'm just going to randomly, this is going to be fun. I'm going to randomly go into the listener email. Oh my God. I don't have someone helping me anymore. There was a girl helping me. And I think she just lost her mind. She would always be like, I'm totally going to do it this week. And then she wouldn't. And then I think she was going through something. Oh shit. I think I changed my email password and now I don't know what it is. So hang on. We might not be able to get into it. Did someone else change it? I don't know what's happening, you guys. I've been a little out of sorts, as you can tell. But yeah, I was going to read the, oh yeah. Here, all right, here we go, you guys. Let me just get into it. Hang on. I stopped reading it for a while because that's where the hate mail comes. Like, your podcast is all about feminism. Okay, this person loves me. She's 40. She likes grunge. Coming to Dayton. All right, here's someone with chemo. Yeah, let's just read nice things that people say, right? What? Maybe you don't always need to hear stuff from me. You can hear it from each other. I won't use your name because you didn't say if I could, so I'll call you Jeannie. Dear Jen, I was looking at something you recently posted, and this quote stuck out to me. None of us is guaranteed life to go the way we want, so the sooner we stop stressing about doing it right, the better. I think I wrote that on, like, one of my social media things. She said, very recently, I was reminded of the lack of guarantees we have in life. Very briefly, on April 28th, I had a mammogram, the 30th, a biopsy. May 5th, met with a surgeon. May 11th, double mastectomy. Anesthetic is really hard on me, and I chose not to have reconstruction because of the chemo and radiation I'll have to get to make sure this nasty crap is gone. Everyone's decision about that is her own, but I thought you'd be interested to hear that there are actually people second-guessing me about not reconstructing, as if I would want to go through this major surgery, followed by months of baldness, including toxins and radiation burning my cells to death, just to have more surgery, pain, and recovery time so I can sport some padding in the front of my chest. For a lot of women, that's the right choice. For me, it makes no sense. They're just boobs. My prognosis is actually really good, so don't take this as a downer. I don't. I know I'll be fine, but I've only gone through the beginning of what will be a really long road. I know your sister went through this, and look how great she is. Yeah, well, she didn't have a double mastectomy. Not that, like, oh, she just had a walk in the park. What a dumb bitch. But yeah, she did have breast cancer, and she did go through the chemo and the radiation, and oh, man. And then the fucking tamoxifen, that pill you have to stay on for 5 years after, that's what really threw her into early menopause and causing really bad, just really horribly annoying things that made it hard for her to sleep. Anyway, I really feel connected to all the people who have shown me so much kindness these last couple weeks. It's humbling. At the same time, I'm wondering how I'll deal with people who question my choices, make comments about my chest and these enormous, well-earned scars. They deserve nothing from me. I have no energy for hate. Ooh, that's a great sentence. They deserve nothing from me, right? I want you to know that I love your podcast. I'm thankful for every laugh or woot woot I can enjoy. I hope you find time to record while you're on the road so much. I need all the good vibes I can get this summer. Oh, okay. Well, I will keep that in mind because, yeah, I don't want to drop off on the podcast when I'm on the road. I really can't because this has to be, you know. Grant has a question. Have you ever considered occasionally wearing a microphone while going about your day, live casting your agony while being forced to dodge small talkers in the Starbucks line? I would definitely listen to that. No, I'm not really as angsty as you guys think. Like, I'm kind of one of those nice people that does the small talk herself. Does that make sense? I just hate the question, how's your day going so far? Like, I just hate, like, robotic, disengaged stuff. But I'm not really Larry David over here. Like, I know it's hard to believe. I come here to, like, get it all out, but I'm really not like that. I kind of go through the day with a smile on my face and really enjoying. That's why I'm so confused by people who are worried about me because I don't have kids or, you know, whatever, is that I'm, with the exception of this horrendous PMS, which just feels like someone is performing an exorcism on me, I'm quite content in a lot of ways. And I'm kind of a happy person. So I just get so frustrated. The only things I get frustrated about, I swear to God, are reviews where people don't understand where I'm coming from, being misquoted in interviews, and social media where people don't know I'm coming to their town and then get mad at me when I kind of snark at them about it. That's really it. That's a pretty good life. Okay. A while ago, you asked about deal breaker movies. Movies a partner must love in order for the relationship to move forward. Mine is Harold and Maude. It's so gruesome and beautiful. I couldn't love anyone who didn't get it. Thoughts on Harold and Maude? Yeah, it's a great movie. It probably wouldn't be a deal breaker for me, and I've only seen it once or twice, and it was a long time ago. But I absolutely loved it. And of course, the fucking, isn't that Cat Stevens does all the soundtracks? So of course, we love it. We love it. If I ever met anyone who was like, that's awful, or I would be like, fuck off. I was having the most fun yesterday. So what happened? Oh, so yesterday I get off the plane. I get on the plane at 7 a.m. I had slept 2 hours. I couldn't fall asleep in my hotel room. You know that energy when you just know that you're have to get up in the morning and so you're like half asleep. So I didn't sleep very much. And then I got on the plane and I couldn't really stay asleep. And so I came home and I had nothing to do on Sunday. I mean, I had work I could do, but I didn't have anywhere to be, thank God. So I took a huge 5 hour nap and I thought, I'll put on a movie on my computer and bring it to bed because I don't have a TV in my room or even a monitor because I don't believe in it. So, but I brought my computer to bed and I'm like, I want to see Thelma and Louise. I haven't seen it in so fucking long. And I totally forgot that that movie was not about someone's husband about to kill them domestic violence wise and she shot him. Like, they totally shot this guy. I sound evil. But, you know, Susan Sarandon's character totally shot a guy after he had attempted raped Gina Davis. Is Gina Davis Thelma? Like, she didn't technically need to kill him, technically. But I guess she was having some trauma from having been raped, which they didn't really get into in the movie. But she had had her own experience with having been raped. And I'm not saying it's right to kill people, blah, blah. But it's such a badass, like, gun movie, you know? And it's like when the cop pulls, like, I love the evolution of them where they keep screwing up. And, like, you know, Thelma's so innocent. Then she sleeps with Brad Pitt and he steals the money. But then she learns how to rob a store. And then the cop pulls them over and they, like, shoot out his tires. And then they put him in the trunk. Like, it's, and then they just are, they're just, like, losing their minds. And then they pull over that big tanker oil truck and they shoot that guy's, like, wheels off and the thing blows up and they just pull him over to be like, why are you being disrespectful to women? Like, as a woman, it's just like, I think you should watch it once a year and just feel like, yeah. And so I fucking loved it. And then I was thinking, like, as much as I'm not an advocate of, you know, gun violence in movies or just, you know, random everyone shooting guns everywhere, you know, like carrying one in Chipotle and stuff. There is something that's real life though, right? So, you know, I'm not a huge fan of just anyone on earth can get a gun in real life, right? It's terrifying. But in entertainment, when guns have been used in really dark, bleak movies like Heathers, it doesn't bother me. It's just so insane to me. It's just, it's totally entertainment. And so I found myself going on Amazon and just reading reviews of Thelma and Louise and Heathers. And people are so upset about those movies that are watching them for the first time now. It's like, this woman was like, I don't understand what's funny about Heathers at all. If you think murder's funny, it's like, it's kind of funny that they murdered all the popular kids. Like, yes, that's called dark comedy, you stupid twit. Anyway. Like, so if I ever met someone like that, which I wouldn't, but that would be, like, what a bummer. Hi, Jen. I caught your show at the Melbourne International Comedy Show. Another comedian recommended you, and I'm glad I saw your show. Well, that's nice. Thank you, other comedians. God, I miss my Aussie friends. Oh, God. Heartbroken. Okay, I need your advice. I've seen a couple of the same comedian's shows twice during Melbourne, as I really like the show the comedian performed. Is this unusual? Would it be creeping the comedian out? And what is it with critics and reviewers? Some of the shows I went to were nothing like what the critics and reviewers said they were. How do you decide what comedians to see? Recommendations from others? Seen their work previously? Random pick? Thanks for your time, Dale. All right, Dale, I'm going to be honest with you. Comedians aren't always feeling like going to see comedy shows. Like, I'm not as obsessed with comedy as you guys are, which is awesome. Thank you for being into comedy. Like, I'd rather go see an art exhibit or something about fashion or the ballet. Like, it's not my hobby, really. I did see comedians' shows at the festival. I saw Daniel Kitson because he's a mutual friend of Eugene Merman and me, and it was recommended. And then Daniel gave me a ticket. I saw Sarah Pascoe and, oh my God, what is Catherine's last name? My head's not working. Catherine, whose her show was after mine in the same room. Catherine Ryan, I loved her show. The way I decided is, yeah, is like I'll read reviews and see who has some hype, and then I'll ask other comedians, like, is this hype or is this good? You know, it's basically other comedians because that's the only people I would really trust in that sense to tell me what they know based on me, what I would like about it. There's a few shows I couldn't get into, but I ended up meeting those comedians later and becoming their friends. So it's like, that was even better. And I couldn't get into them because they were sold out. Not like, I didn't mean I couldn't get into them. Like, I wasn't into it. Yeah, I don't know what's up with reviewers. I really feel like reviewers should just recap and just say, this person talked about these subjects. Reviewers never indicate what the audience was expressing. They never say everyone was laughing. It's really misleading. And critiquing it, I don't understand it. I just don't understand that whole culture. I think it's weird. But it is totally necessary in festival culture. So I don't get it, Dale. It's not creepy to see a comedian's show twice. I've fallen in love with comedians' shows or stand-up acts, and I've seen them twice, you know, even if I know I'm going to go see the same thing. Sometimes it's fun to see if what you saw was magic one night or if it is planned magic and you get to see, oh, that's really that, you know, she didn't do that thing. That must have been improv the night I see it or saw it before. Not as seen it. You know, no, it's not creepy at all. I mean, we're not looking at who's in the crowd. I mean, we're very self-centered people. Unless you came up to us after and said, I just saw it two nights in a row. That would be the only way we would know. We don't see the crowd really. Or we're not going to remember. I don't mean to be rude. We're just not going to, you know, our brains are in like high energy mode at that point. But I also think too that even if you did come up and say that, because I had a bunch of people that came to see me twice, people that are fans of mine, they came to see me in preview week, which they knew I'd be kind of working out new stuff, and they came later. And I was hugely flattered, and I totally took it, not personally, I took it as, oh, that's how you process things. You're the type of person that kind of likes to see something twice. And I thought that was really cool and not at all creepy. If you were like waiting around and like, hey, let's go have dinner, like that might be creepy. Okay. Okay. All right, this is from a gay feminist. Male. This is something that he doesn't find fun that other people do, which is Hawaii. So maybe you guys can relate. Tim, I don't mean to sound like a rich bitch. I've been to Hawaii twice. It's not my favorite place either. For the type of experience you want where it's beaches and gorgeous weather and a margarita, I say Cabo San Lucas. It's cheaper. It never rains. It never wavers. It's hot. Hawaii has like weird weather. The road, like you can sit at a resort in Cabo and never have to leave. In Hawaii, like you at least want to experience like the restaurants, and you, but it's all one-way roads and everyone there is kind of slow and dumb. What? I'm sorry. Okay. Something I don't like at the moment, Hawaii. I'm in school and work full-time as a 37-year-old gay man. I'm alone. My family is amazing. However, I come home to my reflection in the mirror and a dog I could throw in the ocean gladly. What? My parents have each other. My sister is an amazing mom with my great brother-in-law. They deserve it all. But here we go. For her 40th and their anniversary, they wanted to go to Hawaii. After a continuous school schedule and sonography that never ends and envelops my life, I really did not want to go. Everyone around me was like, what? What's wrong with you? Let me paint the picture of ungratefulness I knew would happen. First off, I love my nephews and niece so much that I would, in a hot second, take a bullet. Okay, and B, Hawaii is full of honeymooners and children and old people waiting to die. Well, that's what I was going to do on this trip to Maui. All I wanted was a staycation. I'm 37, I'm gay, so things are limited. I don't want to stick my dick in a hole or fuck anything cute that comes my way. Good-looking men are a dime a dozen in my honeys. Are a dime a dozen, my honeys. Oh, when you're gay, they are. Trust me, not when you're straight. Sorry, you guys. I'm only also attracted to like three people that have ever lived. So that's why. I meet like one person a year that I'm attracted to. And when I do, I'm like, oh my God, they must be my soulmate. Do you look like you haven't eaten and you have blue eyes? I'm into you. Okay. I don't want to stick my dick. Okay. Hawaii is a beautiful place, but when you're a single, doubting, former Catholic on the islands around all this, quote, what society would have you think normalcy, all you want to do is throw yourself in a fucking volcano and hope the lava is hot enough to melt that last piece of your heart that needs a fucking boyfriend. Reverse Golden Girls forever or die trying, desperately seeking someone who understands. From the gay feminist Tim. I'm still here because of the small percentage of people who get me. Thank you so much. I hope he means, does he mean on the planet or listening to the podcast? Okay. Somebody blow your nose, please. Allison. This is Allison Ostrer. Should I give away her email address? Hi, Jen. I just listened to your podcast episode about Joan Rivers and was grossed out listening to you sniff your snot the whole time. Many people do this and I can't understand why. It's so gross. You've got to blow your nose, especially on the air. I was blowing my nose and I was crying. I'm going to write back. It's because I was distraught over my friend and idol dying, you cunt. Just don't listen anymore. We don't need you. Love the listeners and me. I really want to give you guys Allison Oster's email address, but I won't. And she will be blocked from being able to email me. I'm not sure how. Okay, I think that's it. Okay, I think that's it. I mean, why are people so rude? Blow your nose. Like, yeah, I was fucking bawling. And I did blow my nose. And I don't know what else to tell you. And you know what's funny? I just blew my nose on air 2 seconds ago. See, you guys, I can't. I felt you were all with me as I was writing cunt with that. I thought it was funny. All right, I guess we're done. I wasn't as cranky. I got cheered up by talking to you guys. This is so boring. Oh my God. You're going to see a lot of press with me this week, I think. And just know anything you read that implies that I'm going to die alone has to do with being single, which I wasn't when I came up with the title. And there has never been a lack of men in my life. That it is not about that. It is about people who say stupid shit and who do stuff to guarantee that they will, I don't know what, just be with me, you guys. Okay, that's it. I love you all. Until next week, have fun.